You're listening to
Wolves
Potluck.
Welcome back to Golden Hour, a podcast that spotlights Asian musicians. I'm your host, Charlene.
And I'm Dave Yim. So what's been going on with you this month, Char?
Thank you for asking, Dave. It's not like we don't talk every day. let's see. I've been really busy. I've been playing a lot of music shows, which I was surprised came about. I actually opened for one of my favorite artists, Madame Gandhi, who we are trying to get on the pod.
Did you talk to her about being on the pod?
I didn't get a chance to, hilariously, because she was so busy running around and sound checking.
We'll get her.
She's yeah. Like, if you're hearing this, Kieran, like, by the way, I don't know if you know who she is, but she's such a badass, and I'm going to repeat this when we get her on the pod. But not only was she MIA's drummer, but she made headlines in the 2016 marathon for free bleeding her way through the entire race.
Wait, what does that mean?
That means she really had intense. Her period. And she did not wear a tampon or anything and just bled through her pants.
Wow.
Which is the most metal thing I've ever heard in my life.
So metal.
And unsurprisingly, she got a lot of pushback and hate for it by people who were like, that's gross. That's disgusting. But it was it was really making a statement about who like has opinions about women's bodies. And I was just so like, I thought that was so punk. And yeah, she rules her activism and her music, her drumming. She had this huge like set of rototoms and she was just like shredding on the rototoms.
Well, I think Madame Gandhi should be our golden award winner of the month.
Golden shower. Definitely not.
Well, whatever gold you want to give her. Golden drumsticks.
Golden rototoms. That's what I'm going to do.
Golden rototoms.
A little tiny trophy shaped like golden rototoms.
Yes. Congratulations, Madame Gandhi.
And then tonight I'm doing my one person show, Tiger Daughter, which I've written about my mom and my music. And yeah, I've really, it's like the fifth time I've done it and it's been really fun. And I find a lot of meaning and a lot of healing in doing it. So by the time you hear this, it'll be over, but I'm still going to continue to do it. So look out for future tour dates.
There will be many more to come. Can't wait for the whole world to see this show. I've seen it twice. Gets better every time.
Such a good BFF. Thanks, Dave. Tell me about how you're doing, my friend.
Speaking of drums, a wonderful gift from my in-laws. They really wanted to buy me something as a halfway birthday Christmas present. Originally, my father-in-law was going to get me an electric trumpet. And my wife was like, "What? Why? He doesn't play trumpet. What is he going to do with that?
Electric trumpet? I've never even heard of such a thing.
It's like a MIDI trumpet, I guess. So you can like play, you know, MIDI sounds.
Wow,
on it.
That sounds incredible.
And my wife was like, "Why don't you get him a drum set? He's a drummer." I'm very, very grateful to them. For those keeping score at home, it's the Roland VAD 307. I've never owned an electric drum set. I've only sort of played them at Guitar Center, I think, like everybody else, because it's the one thing you can do at Guitar Center in the drum section that just doesn't become so annoying. But I am loving it. I can play in the middle of the night while my wife is sleeping and just kind of wail to all my favorite pop punk songs.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really been playing music in a while. And I haven't owned a drum set in years. You know, I started playing when I was middle school. You know, I've never really been like a professional musician, but you know, drumming was sort of my in to like the music community and meeting people through music and also just like a thing that I spent hours and hours learning how to do. And I think I'm half decent at it. You know, even though I may never play, you know, big venues again, but just having it as something for me at this stage in my life, I think has been a very, a really positive experience for me to get back into it. And I wear a Fitbit now to make sure I get my steps in, and my drum set, whenever I play on the drums, it thinks I take like 50,000 steps. So it's just like,
it's the Fitbit
cannot handle the drumming. Yes. So that's been another positive.
I have a friend who sings backup for Adele. And when she wears her Fitbit, it also says that she takes like 20,000 steps because she's like step touching the entire show. Just back and forth.
Yeah.
I guess that's accurate though, because you are staying, you are taking a step. But does it think that you're taking a step when you're like hitting the drum kit, like with your hand?
Yeah. Like every hit, it thinks is like five steps.
Ah.
So, I mean, I'm sitting, of course.
They think it's a stride when
yeah,
you're walking.
I guess. But you know, it's still a great way to stay in shape.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a full body, full like limb experience.
Yeah. I think you look cute. Can I get your number? I wanna know you. Tell me your secrets.
Tell me your fears. Nobody will notice. So we are super excited about our guest for today's episode. They are called Sundial, which is made up of Jisoo Kim and Dorothy Chan. They first began making music in college and rose to popularity after the success of their song Your Text in 2016. The song was a viral hit. It currently has over 14 million Spotify streams. Since then, they've continued to put together a catalog, which was marked by the Yours EP and a bunch of non-album singles.
Yeah, I saw their stuff years ago. I think it was through a Spotify rec. So, you know, God bless the algorithm. And I went to their page and saw that they were this Asian guy-girl duo doing this sort of bedroom pop stuff. And, you know, I was so taken with them. They were so adorable. And yeah, the music reminds me of the stuff that I, you know, used to try to make. They're much better than what I made. But yeah, I also saw a lot of myself in them. Dorothy is from Hong Kong originally. My family's from Hong Kong. Jisoo's Korean American. My wife's Korean American. My wife and I met because, you know, I hit her up and was like, want a jam? Which is
the ultimate college
pickup
line. Oh, I've used it many a time.
Yes.
We should jam.
We should jam. So yeah, I've been such a huge fan of them over the years, and getting to watch, you know, the new stuff that they've put out, and how they've sort of, you know, changed their sound and experimented with new themes in their songwriting has just been so cool to watch. I feel like a proud older brother watching them. So getting to hear their story from their, you know, from the horse's mouth about how they met and how they're continuing to work together. And they are a couple. I think that's always a thing. Just like, they met at Berklee College of Music, which they tell us about. And yeah, we get into their songwriting process, how it's changed over the years, you know, how they stay focused during writing, and also, you know, how their Asian identity has changed over the past few years. So yeah, I really love this conversation, and the two of them are so cute, and I'm happy to call them friends.
Yes.
Here's a clip of the song, The American Dream, that they mentioned in the interview, but they hadn't put it out yet. And it's actually about their Asian American identity, how they've been sort of wrestling with it. So yeah, a very appropriate song for this podcast. Had an accent as a kid, took 5 years to get rid of it. Take it as a compliment. Well, yeah, maybe we can just dive in to, you know, how you guys got started, I guess, before you met. I guess, so this is a question for each one of you. Like, what was the first moment that you had growing up when you sort of realized that you loved music and were like, huh, maybe I want to, like, do this throughout my life?
Well, I've always played piano, like, since I was, like, five. And I hadn't started, like, singing till, like, I was in, like, freshman year of high school, and that's when I was like, oh my god, like I think I want to do this. And like, I am a huge Taylor Swift fan, like since like sixth grade. Like that's when I like discovered like, oh my gosh, like songwriting. But I've always like wanted to do music my whole life, and like my parents are super supportive of that. So yeah, I played piano growing up and then started singing in high school. And then, yeah, I always wanted to go to Berklee, so that's how we met there.
Yes.
What about you, Jisoo?
Same story as guests, as a lot of Asians in America played piano growing up. You know, I see the Bartok in the back.
Oh, yeah. Jisoo's referring to my piano in the back of my Zoom background, which is my, which has a Bartok for Beginners piano book because I am a shit sight reader. I was also raised playing classical piano. It's a big recurring theme on this show. And I broke out of it because I could not sight read. Like, it really hindered me from doing recitals. I didn't rehearse either. Doing recitals and all that stuff that my mom wanted me to. And so it was just like such a pain in the ass. And so now, like years later, I'm like, classical music is tight. Like, look at all these movements. And like, it feels so metal with these fast little riffs. Like, and so I'm getting into it much later.
I think when we're young, it's like you're pressured into going to that stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, cause like, I feel like, I don't know why that's like, why is that like a, I don't know why it's like in our community. It's like, it's all our parents like, oh, I don't know what clicks for them. They're just like, all right, let's put them into classical piano. You did classical piano. I did classical piano. Like, I feel like there's like a huge percentage of us that did classical piano.
Yeah, I also did.
Oh, rounding out the quartet. Dave has also did classical piano.
What is the Bach, the Animedelia notebook? Do you guys know that one?
Oh my God. No, yeah. I have it somewhere in like in my basement. I have it. It's like there's like a story behind that. I remember there's like a whole preface.
Yeah, it was like for his wife or something. Daughter. I guess. Yeah, or his daughter.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of my mainstays.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it was. It was classical music growing up. And then around like middle school, for some reason, I got into playing string instruments. And so I picked up the cello pretty early on. And it was just that for like a long time. Like I did like the whole like shebang, the government programs, like Allstate, everything. And then I guess from there, I got into the classical music into metal hardcore music pipeline.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And then I got into like Pierce the Veil, like Sleeping with Sirens, Escape the Fate, all that stuff.
Oh, shit.
Yes. And then I was like, man, like I want to make music like these guys. And I picked up the guitar and I was like, this is way cooler than the cello. And that's how I got into producing, because I wanted to record myself like playing covers and stuff like that, singing. So then I picked up Audacity, graduated to like GarageBand later or whatever, and then Ableton. And then from there, I guess I got into like electronic music, like Skrillex and that kind of stuff. And then I was like, how to make a Skrillex scary monster growl. YouTube tutorials. And then just followed the YouTube tutorials and then did producing. And then I wanted to go to Berkeley for producing and then auditioned with cello and then met Dorothy there. Yeah.
Did you ever play any of those metal songs on cello?
You know what? I have tried, because it's like, I remember I played, there was one Sleeping with Sirens song, If You Can't Hang. I tried to do like a cover of it on cello. It was really bad. There's a recording somewhere out there, but I have to take it down. That was bad.
Oh my God. Well, I was going to say that I guarantee there's a TikTok audience for that. Mm-hmm. Like there's a niche for everything now.
If you guys know like rock cello, there's a band called Apocalyptica. They're like
I love Apocalyptica.
Apocalyptica?
Because we're classical nerds. We are Asian classical nerds.
Asian classical nerds. So if you're in that realm, you want to be cool, right? And you're like, I guess I play cello, but I'm not as good as a guitar. So what is something Apocalyptica was?
I remember there was like a phase I got really into these like string quartet cover bands. There was one that did like a Tool album. They did like a bunch of Tool songs, like string quartet arrangements.
Yeah.
But yeah, so once you guys got into Berkeley, I guess tell me, what were both of your journeys like getting into Berkeley? So I actually grew up outside of Boston. So I actually did a summer program at Berkeley doing a percussion workshop. It was a super cool school. I wasn't you know, good enough to actually like go there for college. But yeah, how did you end up, I guess, going to Berklee College of Music in Boston, and what were your paths when you finally like met each other?
I think I missed out this part, but I grew up in Hong Kong, and I've always like heard of Berklee. I think it was because there was like a music academy in Hong Kong that was like started by this guy who like went to Berklee there. And ever since then I was like, oh yeah, Berklee's like the number one like contemporary like music school. Like that was like, I was like dead set on Berklee. I like heard of them. And then I also went to the 5-week summer program. It was like, I think junior year of high school. And then after going there, I was like, oh yeah, like I definitely want to like go to this school, and auditioned as a voice major. And it was really interesting.
Nice. And what about you, Jisoo?
I guess it was similar in like, I did my Google after like the pipeline led me into the production cycle. I was like, number one production, electronic production school in America.
So Asian, like I gotta be the number one. Whatever the best is, I'll go there.
It is. It's the parents, man. Cause it's like, you know what? Cause like it was trying to convince my parents that I wanted the music. That was the hard part. Yeah. Cause like, at least for my parents, cause like maybe.
You're like, I'm still going to school.
Exactly. Still gotta go to school. Right? I mean, if it were up to me, cause like actually right before going to, I think it was like senior year-ish. No, it was junior going to senior year, somewhere around then. I told my parents like, hey guys, like I really want to do like music. This is what I want to do professionally for the rest of my life. And then there was a guy out in LA named La Castlevania. He did like a lot of the soundtracks for like John Wick and stuff like that. If you guys know like the EDM scene. And I went out and did that. And he was like, wait, why are you going to college? Just literally just save that money and just be in LA and just actually do the music in there. But you know how parents are. And so like, they were like, all right, if you're going to do music, then at least go to school for it. And so I was debating at that time whether or not to go to Emory for cello or go to Berklee for production. But I felt like if I was going to do music, I was like, you got to kind of 100% it. And I feel like that's been like our, like a recurring theme in me toward these lives is like, if you want to pursue music, you have to do it full on. Like you can't just kind of do music, like, especially like for what we want to do, especially as artists. And so at that time I wanted to be like a DJ, an EDM producer or whatever. And I was like, you know what? Then I told my parents, all right, you know what? I'm going to go to school for it and fine, it'll be Berklee. And I guess it was just a series of Googling that led there.
That's awesome. So how did you guys eventually find each other and decide, hey, we should work together?
And date.
The dating part came first. And it was like, we met through a group of like mutual friends one night because we were like trying to grab dinner and like study. And
very college.
Yeah. Very college. We met at a Japanese teriyaki house. Teriyaki house, I think, was the name.
Cute. And then from there, how did you discover that you both wanted to write, and like how did that lead to collaborating?
Ooh.
I think it's like the classic like like music school like.
Let's
oh my
jam.
God.
Yeah,
let's yes, like jam. I was just gonna say. Well, you want to jam is like as much of a like, do you want to go on a date line?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it's Berklee. Do you like jazz?
It was like several like practice room, like jam sessions. And then we're like, let's just like throw down some chords and like on Ableton and like see what we do. And then like, it was really unserious at first. And we're like, let's like, we finished the song and we're like, we should put it on like SoundCloud or something.
Yeah.
And at that time we didn't like have a name for the band. And it was like one night, like we were like having like takeout, like Chinese food, like right outside like my room.
Yeah.
it was like 4 a.m. and we're like, we should have like a name, right? And then we're like, what's something that like we both like love? I think we're trying to like get like really deep.
We're like, you know, like music, you know, students, so like literally freshman year, like what's like nature and like time, like our life.
Yeah. Yes. I love it.
We're like, you were like sundown. I was like, oh, that's a good one. So it kind of stuck.
It has a lot of staying power.
Yeah.
It's really easy to remember. It's
like starting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it does very much speak to, you know, just if I may, like, you know, your guys' sound, like there is a sunniness to like the music that you create. Even the songs that you have that are, you know, maybe a little more introspective and sort of like reflective, there is always just like a feeling of joy in what you're doing. So I feel like having the sun as part of your name, like, I don't know whether, you know, maybe it was chicken or egg, like which came first, but like it definitely speaks to, you know, the music that you guys make. So I good on you, whether you were like smoking or like drunk or whatever, like the universe conspired.
Glad it worked out. Yeah, totally intentional. Yeah.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's like the first idea is the best idea and you just shouldn't overthink.
It always is. It always is.
So, you know, so once you guys got together, and I'm sure it's evolved since, you know, your college days, but, you know, your songwriting process, are you guys like in the sort of intricacies of it, like together, like writing every note and lyric along the way? Or do you kind of like separate and kind of do your own thing and then bring a piece to the other and let the other person add? Like, how does that work for your process?
That's a good question.
Yeah. It's definitely evolved over time, because in the beginning, like we did kind of like everything together, because it was like it was pretty organic. It was just like we're like teaching each other stuff that we know. Like she has like this immense knowledge of like harmony and like arrangement, and like I had the technical knowledge, so I was like, okay, like we can try to put that together. And so it was like a lot of learning from each other in the beginning, for sure. But over time, as we, I guess, took it as like a job, mm-hmm. more seriously, and we didn't really take Sundial seriously as a job until like the last like 2-3 years. But once we started realizing, oh my god, we have to pay rent, we have to like actually make songs and in a timely order, I guess we started specializing a little bit, but we still try to do as much as we can together, because it's like, I don't know, I just feel like we still make our best stuff together.
Yeah,
when we're in the same room together.
Yeah, I think initially, mm-hmm. we like come together about like topics we want to talk about, and then we like kind of divvy up, and then like I'll like start a verse, and then usually like it always ends up being like a stream of consciousness thing, and then like I'll bring it to you and be like, what do we do with this? And then like we like write together from there, and then production, you like kind of start like a good
like a vibe.
Yeah, a vibe. And then yeah, it's really collaborative, and it's mm-hmm. yeah, I feel like we kind of just got like our workflow like down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which says a lot, because you've been together for like what, 5 years now? I don't know you what the timeline is, but oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a long time for mm-hmm. us too. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How would you say it's evolved since you first started writing and producing together to where you're at now? Because you said you said that you just figured out what your flow is, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I think it also is a part of the time crunch. Because it's like once like more people start getting involved in your project and in your business, then you're like, okay, like, then it's because like if we're just working off of each other, like we can set timelines however we want. But when you're talking like when you're trying to plan longer term, which is, I guess, what we're trying to do now, is that, OK, we can take Sundial seriously. This is something that we actually want to do. How do we make it long term? Then you got to have plans. Right. And with plans come this necessity of following some time requirements, like this song has to be done by this time. And I hate that in like a creative sense, because it's like I genuinely think when it comes to music or anything creative, it's the universe talking to you. And sometimes like it's not talking to you and you can't force that. But Sometimes you have to force that. Sometimes you have to ask the universe. So from those time crunches, we've had to like come up with like a, I don't know, like a more corporate system. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah, like a more efficient way for us to like make songs faster. And it's definitely taken a while. I think we've kind of figured it out.
Yeah, I think we have. Yeah. Because it's like, it was more just like we did everything together. And it's good because we're both kind of perfectionists in a type of way. So like we're the types that will literally mull over one word. Like we'll literally sit there for like an entire day and go like, is this the right word? And we'll write like 10 variations of that verse. And like we said, we'll go back to the beginning. Yeah. Sometimes the first way we wrote it was the best. Mm-hmm. But as we learn to like kind of like, I guess, I don't know, like accept that and learn that, hey, you know what? Like not everything has to be perfect. Not everything has to be like absolutely like the best. Cause it's like, I think it's more important to get it down than to get it like perfect. Cause like sometimes if you try to get it perfect, it doesn't even come out to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious about you mentioned, I guess the word you used was like corporatization or like a corporatizing process of your workflow. So I'm curious because I think that's something that not only songwriters, but anyone writing, really any creative person like can struggle with when you're working on like a deadline that's self-imposed, or if you have sort of like flexible deadlines, or if it's an independent project. So I guess what are, I guess this workflow that you've, this code that you've cracked, what's the process like for you now?
Post-it notes.
Yeah.
A ton of post-it
The key.
Yeah.
Post-it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, but yes. Yes.
The post-it notes. I just held up some post-its as well.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of post-it notes for like production notes. What else? I think we have more like a stricter schedule then of like when we make TikToks, when we write, and like when we go into production. I think initially when we first started like our band in college, like we had no schedule. Like we're just making music for fun.
Yeah.
So everything is like super lax. Like there's no structure around it, but I think there's definitely that like learning curve when you're like turning your hobby into like a career. And yeah, it's a bit of a change in like dynamic, but it works.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of planning ahead. I think like our biggest, like whenever we have hurdles, we realize it's because we didn't plan ahead. And it's like, and I guess we're not like really talking about like long-term plans, because it's like if an email comes and they're like, hey, like we want you guys to play a show tomorrow, I mean, we kind of drop everything, we'll probably do it. But in terms of like, okay, being realistic with our goals and then being able to break down that. I mean, like everyone knows that, right? You have that goal, then you break it down, but then like actually like doing that together and just like sitting down at the beginning of every Sunday and going like, okay, for this week, what are we trying to do? Okay. And then just doing that every single day. And so like at the end of every night, we try our best to also, okay, tomorrow, what is our day going to look like? And then we go to bed, then we do that. And then at the nighttime, then again, trying to do that as much as possible. Of like, especially like when, because we don't really have much corporate experience. Like, I mean, we worked at some like social media company for a hot minute in LA, but that was like our only experience with like an actual job. And I think it's what we realized was that planning is also key, which is why the post-it notes help. It really is about planning and like understanding, okay, like it's like what are the pieces that have to get done, and then like what is the most important, and then doing those first.
I love that you talk about equally allowing the universe to inspire creativity, and you're also clearly so ambitious and meticulous and organized, and you have to have that like business brain in order to make this a career, in addition to having genuine artistic inspiration. So I'm curious how you balance those two aspects of what you do, because they're equally important and one can't exist without the other. Like Prince was famously an incredible businessman and he had no shame around being like, I'm going to write a hit today and it's not selling myself out if I want to make $1 million. And it was really interesting because like he wrote some of his best songs that way and it doesn't make it any less like impactful or soulful because you're intentionally sitting down and like allowing that creative inspiration to come to you, you know?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's probably discipline. Cause then it's that there is that learning curve that you have to push. It's like, okay, I love making references to like video games and games. Cause I feel like it's the best way to like visualize things. It's like when you're learning a video game for the first time, like whether it's like chess or Valorant, you know, then it's like, there's like that initial learning curve, right? It's hard. It's so hard because you're like, you're still learning how to move your pieces. You're still learning how to aim. You're still learning how to shoot, but you have to do it every day, right? Because then if music is the universe talking to you and you winning a game is the equivalent in like these games, right? Then it's like, there's that initial period that's like difficult because you're still trying to learn the language. You're still trying to learn like patterns. And once you get into the groove or once you start like doing it long enough, like you can trust your body, like it will learn these patterns and it will adapt. And as long as you do it consistently, I genuinely believe that like it will happen, and not necessarily forcing the music to happen, but naturally like your body will be more open and susceptible. Cause it's like, if you're not practicing it every day, then yeah, if you're cold turkey and then all of a sudden going in out of nowhere and trying to get the universe to talk to you, it's going to be hard. But if you've already been trying a lot and then you go into a dry spell, but then you get back into it, but because you've put all these hours in of learning, like, okay, like this is how I receive music, then it's easier to speak that language and it's easier to come out.
Ooh, I love how you said that. You receive music as opposed to making it, which you still do. Both of those things are true.
Hi, I'm Marvin.
And I'm Rira.
And we're the hosts of Books and Boba, a book club and podcast dedicated to books by Asian and Asian American authors.
Each month, we pick a book by an Asian author to read and discuss on the show.
We read a variety of genres, including contemporary and historical fiction, sci-fi and fantasy, romance and cozy mysteries, and so much more.
Our past book club picks have included Pachinko by Minjin Lee, Patron Saints of Nothing by Randy Ribeye, Grace of Kings by Ken Liu, and The Kiss Quotient by Helen Huang.
Every month, we also go through the latest news in Asian American literature, as well as chat with some awesome Asian authors about their works.
So whether you want to start reading for fun again or diversify your TBR list, we got your Asian literature cravings covered. For more info, check out our website at booksandboba.com, and you can listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever you find your podcasts.
Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
I want to ask a little bit about the evolution of your sound, because as we've said, I have been a fanboy for a long time. So I've kind of heard your sound change, especially in your recent releases that came out this year, and I think like 2022. You know, your earlier stuff, like there was your text, I think was probably the big one that sort of like popped off for you guys. A lot of like intricate electronics. I was getting like Postal Service, you know, kind of like
Postal Service. Oh, yeah,
kind of like, you know, these little intricate moments. And then some of the stuff you put out recently, you definitely hear more of like live instrument feel. It sounds like you have some live drums and like guitars and stuff. Almost like there's like a pop punk chorus.
Self-help books I won't read. Put podcasts on just to fall asleep. Yeah. Tell myself I don't have the time.
So yeah, how has your the creative process of your production evolved since you started this project?
I think in the earlier days when it was more electronic based, we definitely started with production first, and that was like the backbone of it. And as we sort of like slowly moved into like the more pop leaning stuff. I think I was starting like, not Who Cares, but like Sometimes I Hate You, Worst of Me onwards. Mm-hmm. That was when we were like, why don't we like try to like write first or like, mm-hmm. you know, start there first and like see where that takes us with production. And yeah, a lot of our songs now kind of start from writing first. And yeah, I feel like because of that too, it's like our songs have a more like intentional message. Because I think we also start with like, what do we want to talk about? Like that's more important. I think it's like, that's what's like changed really. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in the past it was more like a vibe first and like, yeah.
Yeah, I think the intentionality changed it.
Yeah.
It's like, once we started really taking Sundell seriously, I was like, oh my God, this is a job. Then it's like, okay, then what is our job as an artist? And it's like to have that message. And I think once we started with the intention first, then we realized, not that the production doesn't matter, but it's more of what can we do to make the production fit the message and not the other way around.
I think the production matters even more because like you're
that's also the point. Yeah.
Like, because production like elevates and like helps tell the story of the lyrics, you know? Mm. So,
yeah. Yeah, it has to serve the meaning of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just pretty sounds.
Exactly. Just lyrics. Mm-hmm. And like, we like want our production and like songwriting to like have like prosody and like be like creative and like mm-hmm.
and like express itself. Yeah. I think also playing live music really, really changed it, because mm-hmm. once we started playing live, like we're like in our mm-hmm. beginning, like said this guy was kind enough to have us open for him a couple times, and our setup looked completely different. Yeah. We had like she was like on like a keyboard, and then we had like a drum pad, and then like we were like, is this what we want to do?
Oh yeah, we like play the drops. We're like,
yeah. Play the stairs. But like, and like even with the keyboard, it's like you don't like when you're down there. Like sometimes on the stage, you don't really know what's going up there. You know what I mean? So we're just like what we want to do? And I think from there. Like she was like, no, I want to play guitar. Like I was like, I want to play something other than just playing an electronic drum pad.
Right. Like, and, we both want to like sing and like not like just solo for like 2 minutes. So yeah, I think live shows really helps like shape our sound too and figure out what we want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you were talking about how you sit down sometimes and you go, what do we want to talk about today? Do you usually come up with lyrics together, or do you write individually and bring those stories to each other? And I'm so curious collaborating with a partner in this way, because you know each other so well. And so I imagine that you talk as much as you write about your experiences. And so how do you create that trust to explore things that you might be kind of afraid to say in front of each other and turn it into a piece of art that the other person's going to be singing on? And you explore this a little bit in your song Sometimes I Hate You, which I absolutely love. And I love the live video for you that you guys created with the little water guns. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
That was a quarantine moment.
Oh yeah.
It's so perfect. I was texting Dave like, this is so cute. I'm dying.
Sometimes I love you. Then you do something stupid. Sometimes I love you. Then you do something selfish. Sometimes I love you. But sometimes I hate you.
I remember that song, and I remember talking about it with her, and especially like vulnerable things like that, or like even like I remember Worst of Me, or even like we have like some other like songs that we've written. It's understanding that like what we're writing about, what we're talking about is like not, it's not us. It's not the entirety of who we are. And it is a part of you. And the same way, like for someone going like, hey, telling their spouse or their partner, going like, hey, this is like a pet peeve that I have. I mean, it's just communication. And for us, music, if music is a language, then that's the way we can communicate with each other in a way. It's like, if we're talking about each other, or if we're talking about like scenarios that happened, we've definitely talked about it. We've had our fair share of bouts about it. And like, oh, why did this happen? Why? We've definitely had that. But because we've had that, that's why we can write about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely like super vulnerable, like to talk about these things. But I think it like makes us closer as like a couple too. It's like weirdly like making music together is like the most vulnerable like that we are like in those times. It's like yeah, it's kind of nice that like we have this way to like bond with each other. And yeah, the relationship songs are definitely like harder to write because they are like very like personal, but like it just takes like kind of distancing yourself from it. It's like it's art at the end of the day. And yeah, I think for me personally, it helps like remind myself that like this is like for others, like when you put it out into the universe, like it's not yours anymore. So just the feeling that like maybe it could help somebody like alleviate some stress and like off of me. So yeah, I don't know if I'll see you too.
That's very selfless.
Yeah, I love that. I remember the first time I heard Sometimes I Hate You, and I was like, whoa, they are like really putting each other on blast right now. Just like, and yeah, it's just such a vulnerability that like, I don't think I've heard like a band that I was like, you know, I knew was sort of in relationship and a couple like talking to each other in the context of a song like that. So it was just the vulnerability of that was just so striking to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that song was hard to write. It was like,
because like we're like because the hardest part was trying to come up with the lyrics. We're like,
yeah,
I'm not, especially because like in the moment, like we're not mad at each other when we're writing. We're like excited to do it, and then we're like, well,
it was literally like you would like pitch each other lyrics, and it's like, oh, like remember that time you were like this, and I was like, yeah.
Sometimes I hate you.
Like, pitch each other verse. Like, wow, you've really been holding on to that for a long time, huh?
Like, oh, damn.
But honestly, I feel like that was one of the easier, not easier songs to write, but like one of the more like understanding songs from like each other's, because we're like, all right, you know what? Then like that is, it happened. We're gonna talk about it and we're gonna expel it from our system, right. Type of way.
Yeah. You know? I remember we were on a date for like our like however many year like anniversary, and like right before I left the door, like I saw a comment on YouTube that was like, this relationship is toxic, and I was like,
what was that in response to? Oh, the Sometimes I Hate You.
Yeah, it's like someone on YouTube said, it was like a YouTube comment or something.
Wow. Yeah, and I spent the whole date going like, oh my god, like in my head about it, and I was like, it like took me some time to be like, okay, like I just need to like separate myself, because like I'm obviously not in that place anymore. So yeah, but like the internet is like so like people just like your feelings are like immortalized, and like your like certain experiences are immortalized in art. So it's hard to feel like they're apart from you sometimes. But yeah. But
and it's such a double-edged sword, because the bigger you get, the more of that you get.
Yeah.
But I think that is it. It's like trying to separate yourself from it, because like you. Yeah. But it's hard. It's so hard sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to ask, you know, this is an Asian American themed podcast, Asian Americans in Music. You're in a very special place in that we don't see a lot of like Asians in media, let alone like, you know, healthy Asian couples, despite what the YouTube commenters say. I do believe you do have a very healthy relationship. So yeah, I guess how has your, you know, the way you view your own identity as Asian Americans changed in the past few years, both as individuals, as a couple, and as a community at large?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
You know, those are stuff that I feel like we haven't talked about literally only until recently. Like it's on our TikTok. We have a demo of it, of like a song that we're trying to write about, like in terms of our,
Asian,
yeah,
our experiences
of being Asian American.
stranger in my home. So I'm pretty for an Asian. So I'm smart, but that's a given. I'm not special, I'm just different. You're not racist, just a question. Must be nice to be included.
Because I think you're right. It's like, especially even like from the COVID thing to like, just like in general, like there's not a lot of Asians here in America, but there are. You know what I mean by that? Like, it's like, I like lived and grew up in like this random part of Atlanta. Like I say Atlanta, but it was like the outskirts of Atlanta, you know? It's, and there was a Asian community here, but not to the extent of where I saw it when I went to college. Like I was like, oh, this is what it means to be in the Asian community. So growing up here, there was definitely a lot of, you can't help but realize that you're Asian. You know what I mean? It's like, once I realized, oh my God, I'm not white, in like elementary to middle school, I'm like, oh my God, I'm different from these people. There was definitely that realization of like, of your race, of who you are, and how that affects people around you and like yourself. Cause like, for me, when I walk into a room and it's just full of just people that don't look like me, I mean, the first thing that I do is like, oh my God, I'm different. But trying to figure out what that difference is and what that means to me, I feel like definitely took a long time. Because it was like trying to figure out what Asians are and who Asians are in the scope of like, you know, like what you talk about in the macro level. I feel like it was challenging, definitely. And I can imagine so for a lot of other people, like Asian Americans too, because there was no real representation or like to look up to like, oh, this is the type of person that I want to be. This is the type of Asian I want to be. Not that there has to be one, but I feel like it does help sometimes having role models to look up to in that space. And so in a weird way, like, especially because like, I feel like Asian Americans are still kind of young in America, just like as like a community. I mean, there's definitely a lot of us who've been here for a long, long time, but in terms of like pop culture and media and stuff, we've had to, I feel like we're in like that early space where we're still trying to figure out like what our culture is, if you know what I mean. I feel like for a lot of other ethnic groups, they have like defined cultures that they come from. But weirdly enough, it's like, if you're talking about like Latinos in America, they have a shared language. But in America, I mean, just even us, like we're all grouped into this one big Asian, right? But like, if you're Asian, you know, like there's even like divides even amongst there, you know?
Yeah.
And so because we also have like that like language and cultural barrier, I feel like trying to call each other brothers and sisters of an Asian community also feels kind of weird too, because we're not all this same. We might look the same, but culturally we're still all pretty different. Like we can't even speak the same language to each other most of the times. I mean, I'm still trying to learn Cantonese, and man, the tones are so hard. It's so hard. And so it's like trying to figure out who we are as like a community, I feel like is definitely, it's going to be a struggle because of that in the macro level. And that macro level definitely affects, you know, like the micro level too. Like, what does that mean for me? Like, who am I? Like, who are we in terms of like, you know, Asians in America? Because I mean, the first instinct for me was definitely to go like, oh, why does it matter that I'm an Asian in America? Why can't I just be a person in America, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's impossible, because that's just what people are. The face that you see is the, can I relate to that face? I mean, that's just instinctually, like, I mean, I feel like I have to be realistic about that. for myself. It's like, for the longest time, we've always said like, hey, you know what? Like, why can't we just be artists first? Why do we have to be Asian American artists? Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's reality though. I mean, it's like, that's the first thing people see, and that's the first thing they're going to judge off of you. I mean, I can try to tell myself like, or like tell others, like, it doesn't matter what my race is, but it kind of does. Because that's how people interact with people. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just what it is that they look at you first and they're like, like first impressions, this is what you are, stereotypes. And you can't run away from those things. And so as the macro level Asians, as like, as we as a Asian Americans are still trying to find our place in like the Western world, I feel like for us, as long as we can tell our story of who we are, then that's probably going to be the story for most Asian Americans too. And hopefully through that, there's this relatability and a sense of community from there, because we relate to one another. And that's something I feel like Dorothy has stressed a lot, especially in her songwriting, is the talking about writing from what we know and not what we don't know.
Yeah. Just wanted to make like sense, like in terms of like what people understand. Yeah. I think we all like, it's so different because like for me, I grew up in Hong Kong. So I like moved here like for college, but I also went to an international school in Hong Kong. Mm. So I'm like at this like weird middle ground where like I'm here and I sound like everybody here, but I'm not Asian American because I didn't grow up here. So like the culture is like a little different. But in Hong Kong, when I'm back home, like I don't really resonate with that culture either, because then in international school, or like in the international school I went to, like I was super like immersed in the Western culture. Like I like watched Disney Channel. Like I'm like, I like wanted to be white, like in Hong Kong, which is weird. Like why would you want that? Like everybody looks like you, like wouldn't you want to like fit in? And then it's just like, I'm at this like weird, like middle ground when I'm like anywhere. It's like this like third culture kid type thing where it's like, where do I belong? But I think I'm like slowly learning to like embrace that, you know, like you don't have to like the culture that you're from or like the culture that like you grew up in, like that doesn't have to define you. And yeah, I think writing like songs together like really helps us like go through that and like work through that together.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's why I think what you were talking about of sort of telling your individual stories is actually, you know, kind of the most important thing that you can do, because someone else is going to see that who looks like you and is going to say, oh, here's this like Asian person going through these things that I'm also going through. I've never seen that before. You know, I've only seen people who don't look like me, you know, dealing with this, and they can form that connection and understand that, you know, what I'm going through, even if it's hard, like it's okay and it's normal. And, you know, that shared experience, like by you putting yourself out there, you know, that's bridging that gap. And that's creating a more flourishing Asian American community where we can look to each other for support. And I think that's part of what Charlene and I are trying to do with this podcast. We felt that it was important to, you know, by highlighting Asian American voices in a space like music and songwriting, like, you know, showcasing everyone's individual stories and everyone's individuality through this creative process of music making was like what we wanted to elevate and show the diversity of experiences, but also show the connectedness and the shared experiences as well. Thank you guys for sharing that with us. So I guess, you know, lastly, what's next for you guys? You've talked about, you know, the corporatization of your writing process and needing to sort of put out more stuff. But what's on the horizon for Sundial?
We're currently finishing up an EP.
Yep. So our EP release.
Yes.
So lots of new music. So once we get that train rolling, it's going to keep rolling.
May or may not play couple headline shows
later this year. Yeah. Yeah, so later, so really? We'll let you guys know. Yeah. And then we have, I guess we really like design merch. I feel like that was really fun.
Yeah.
So we definitely want to do more of that. But I guess those are the three big things for now. Mm. Mm-hmm. Like any other artist, but for us, it's our first time doing any of these things, so we're definitely excited for that.
You are a full, like, in-house production, the two of you.
Yes.
It's been so wonderful having you on the podcast, both of you. This has been such a wonderful conversation, and I am just so glad that we got to meet and we got to talk about art, and can't wait to see you live. Hit us up when you come to New York.
Yeah, we'll definitely let you guys know.
Thank you guys for having us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much again to Sundial for joining us on the show today. You can find them on Instagram at Sundial. And their most recent album, The Roaring Twenties, is available everywhere now. Please subscribe, follow, rate the podcast on whatever platform you listen to. Your engagement really, really helps us out, and we would appreciate it so much. And we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think about the show, who you'd like to hear from in future episodes. We are all ears. Send us a message on Instagram at goldenhourpod or email us at goldenhourwithk@gmail.com. That's goldenhourwithkaye@gmail.com. Golden Hour is created by me and produced and edited by Dave Yin. We are part of the Potluck Podcast Collective. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.